All right, well, we're back.
Hi, everybody. I'm still Brian.
I'm still Rui. And Brian, great demo.
Oh, thank you.
Nicely done. So we're going to cover phones and devices. So that's where we're going next. So we'll do an introduction on phones and devices. We'll look at the device deployments, phone management, and then look at support for analog devices. So let's get right to it. So what is a device? So what we're referring to is basically two IP desk phones. There's two types. We'll look at the goals. We'll look at the type of phones, hardware specifications, language and country support, authentication methods, the information worker phone modes. There's different modes that you can have them in. And then compatible IP phones, what their goals and the type of phones that are supported. So let's move on. So what is a device? So a device refers to a unified communications device. It's really an endpoint. And it can be a headset, it can be a webcams, or hard phones. Hard phones really are the endpoints. Webcams and headsets are not. They're just the peripheral that connect to an endpoint. So that would be like, you know, your desktop phone, for example. And then these phones are running the Microsoft Link Phone Edition. So it would be a desktop or information worker phone, a conferencing phone, or a common area phone. And we'll look at those different types. So a Link Phone Edition, so it's optimized for Link and is compatible with IP phones that are tested and qualified for Link. So that is what we're referring to as the Link Phone Edition. So the goals are to target information workers, conference rooms, and common areas. And what we mean by common areas is basically if there is a phone in the lobby and somebody needs to call to reach the party they're trying to reach, so that would be a common area phone, so a phone that is in an area that anybody could use.
Right, so it's not owned by any particular person.
Right, it's not associated with a particular user, so they're not logging on to that phone, unlike the information worker phone, for example. And it is running Link Phone Edition, and it's enabling, so Link Phone Edition enables partners to build a wide range of devices. So it's using that software, but the device itself can be any type of phone provided by different manufacturers. And it supports the key voice request for proposal RFP features, and addresses the enterprise voice manageability requirements.
And the RFP thing is an interesting thing because originally when a lot of the voice features were put into Link, it was how can we get, and I think the number was 80, it could have been higher, but 80% of all RFP requirements would have to be within the initial launch of the application, and then we're up to somewhere in the upper 90s to 100% where we meet the functionality, maybe a different way to approach the functionality. Things that come up quite often is stuff like I need the ability to restrict users' access to long distance via a PIN. We don't do it via a PIN, we do it via Active Directory account. But regardless, we meet the RFP, and that was a big driving factor to just say, there's common complaints that we don't have all of the features of some other PBXs, and you're right, we don't, and they don't have some of them that we have. But in generality, we meet the needs across the majority of people that put out RFPs for new phone systems.
Exactly. So, and in terms of phones that are supported, you can see from this diagram here that there's a low-end range up to the high-end range. And you can see in the low-end range, all the Polycom, Astra, HPs, and then all the way up to the high range where you have conference room phones. And so there is a wide variety of phones that are supported for meeting different organizations' needs there. So in terms of common area phones, what we have is the on the low-end area, because you don't want to have these phones to be high-end phones, obviously, because they're going to be banged up and used by a lot of people. And so we want to limit the set of functionality and features that are available on those common area phones. So we have here Polycom, Astra, and HP. Of course, more to come.
All right. And when we talk about lower functionality, they typically do not have the pass-through networking switch within them. Some of them do, some don't. To save cost, they're only 100 megabit instead of being gigabit when they do. They don't have a speaker, a mic on it for a speaker room, that kind of stuff, because it's just a common area general phone, house phone. You know, the concept of you go and pick up the phone and you can only call internal numbers. Yeah. And it's just stuff.
It's a basic functionality. Right. Yeah, exactly. So then we move on to the information worker phone. And now you have, you know, a more of a variety here. and more functionality. You'll see there's an LCD display on there. You have all the functionality of speakerphone and the ability to see presence information, to view, to set presence information. So when, the moment you pick up the headset, it'll set your presence to on call or busy, and other features in there as well, right?
Yeah, the bigger difference between the two, because obviously a phone's a phone from a link perspective. So if I'm a common area phone, I have a contact object, and you can search for that contact object within your link client, and you could find it, and it would show presence based off in a call, not in a call. But the bigger change is that there's no integration into any Exchange. And the major reason for that is, I don't want to say a limitation of Exchange, but Exchange doesn't understand PIN authentication, and the common area phones can only do PIN authentication because they don't have a USB port. They can't be tethered, therefore I can't pass my NTLM credentials over to Exchange to log into Exchange. Unlike the Tanjay, which the CX700, you remember the original flagship phone, actually had a little keyboard that popped up and you could actually type in your domain, your username, and that way we could tie it directly in without having prompts to do so on your keyboard.
Exactly. You could actually authenticate onto the device with your credentials, your corporate credentials. Whereas on the common area phones,
it's
managed.
It's PIN only, right?
It's PIN only. It's managed by the administrator on that case. And then the next part is you have conference phones, mostly developed by Polycom there. And so you have the full functionality of a conference device.
It's a typical star phone that's in your environment.
Exactly. All right, so hardware specifications. So we have it broken down in terms of common area phones, information worker phones, and then conference phones. And you can see here there's different types of features. So the audio type for the common area is only the handset. For information worker, you can have the handset and hands-free, as well as the headset. And then in the conference, really only the hands-free, which makes sense there. And then in terms of audio processing, for common area is wideband DSP. Same thing across all of the other.
So quality is the same across them all. We're not making it a worse quality call. Your functionality is on the hardware is just different.
Right. Yeah. And on the networking side, as Brian mentioned, the bandwidth here is one port with 10 to 100.
10-100, yeah.
10-100. On the information worker is two ports with a gigahertz bandwidth, and the conference is back to 10-100.
Right. And the logic there is if you only have one port, then it's just the phone. The phone's never going to pull over 100 megabits of data. The gigabit port, because it's actually a switched port on that information worker phone, is a pass-through. So your PC could be connected on the back end. We don't want to limit your PC communications to just 100 megabits, so a gig port's put on there, which obviously increases cost, but that's what the phone costs more, so there you go. That's one of the reasons.
Right, and so the way it would work is the phone is connected directly to the port, and then your computer or laptop is connected to your phone.
Exactly.
So that's how it would work. And then in terms of power, it's all over power over Ethernet. And then there is the ability, like Brian was saying, to be tethered. And that's only available for the information worker phone and the conference phone. So there is no scenario there for the common area phone to be tethered to a laptop. And then you have displays as well as inputs.
Everything else. Yeah, it comes down to, does it have USB? What kind of network ports does it have?
Exactly.
And does it have a mic?
Does it have a mic? Exactly. And then in terms of language and country support, it's shipping in 16 languages. They're all listed here. I'm not going to go through them. And they've been certified in 51 countries, and so you can see the list here as well. So that's just for your information. You can take a look at this. You can use this as a reference. And we talked about PIN authentication, so there's different types of authentication methods. We have the PIN, which is combined with the phone extension or phone number, and then you have your PIN. So those two pieces of information will allow you to authenticate. And then, of course, there's your username and domain, which is what you use to log into Link anyways. And that is also available only when the device is tethered to a machine running Windows Link. So that's available. And then there's, last but not least, certificate-based authentication. So upon successful authentication, whether it's through PIN-based authentication or domain username password authentication, which would be NTLM authentication here, the user will request a certificate, and once the certificate is published to the user's device, then that certificate can be used for subsequent logins to Link Server, and that authentication process occurs using TLS DSK authentication. So those are the methods there of authentication. So in terms of information worker phone modes, there are two modes. There's one that's the enhanced mode, and there's a basic mode. So when you're using PIN authentication directly with the phone, you have access to your contacts, your photos, your message waiting indicators, so that tells you that you have a voicemail that has not been listened to. You have voice features that comply with the RFP, remote usage, and conference leader control. So those would be in your basic mode. And then that's when you do PIN authentication. Now, if you authenticate using your username and password, that's going to be a stronger authentication there. And so that's likely going to be through Link when it's tethered. Now you have more access here. You have individual voice messages, call logs through Exchange, Outlook contacts, calendar, one-click conference join. That's really convenient. So you just have to click. You don't have to type in all the numbers and the conference IDs and all that stuff. And then better together with the Link integration. So If you accept the call on your desktop, you can actually pick it up on your phone. You can use a speakerphone on there. And that gives you more a better user experience. So compatible IP phones, what are the goals there? So the phone, the idea here is that we don't want to require a gateway. So unlike previous phones, which were not compatible with Link's SIP protocol, you actually needed a gateway to connect those phones to Link. So the phones were connected through the gateway and then to Link, but that's no longer necessary when you connect and you're able to connect directly to your Link infrastructure with compatible phones. So that's the value proposition there. Those phones become native endpoints to the user. So you can Link can directly refer to them. And it provides a core call functionality and presence awareness. So when you pick up the phone, it automatically changes your presence. When you put the phone down and you hang up the call, it automatically updates your presence as well. And depending on the vendor who provides the server management ability, you can actually provision and update those phones. So it's nice when you have a new firmware update, you can push those out, and you can provision those phones remotely. And it runs on a manufacturer OS, not the Link Phone Edition OS there. Right.
And just like we talked about in 336, that is where phones are going. So the Link Phone Edition will no longer be developed. It's features done. It'll be patched and maintained, just like any other Microsoft application. But feature development has stopped. So the reliance has been moved to the partners to develop new exciting functions and features. And like we looked at in 336, there's wireless handsets, that's traditional wireless, you know, your little wireless handsets, not your wireless on your ear handsets. There are all kinds of new communication devices that are being explored by the partners, including video phones and things of that nature. So it's moving the ability for the partners to really leverage what they know how to do best, and that's make phones, and tie it into an IP solution. Voice over IP solution, in this case Link. I don't want to say downside, but the difference being that because it's not managed by Link, that means the management pieces are now, you're relying on the vendor from doing it. So while you look at these new devices and the functions and features they offer, they will differ phone to manufacturer. Unlike the Link Phone Edition, you knew if you got a Link phone, whether it be an HP, whether it be a Polycom, or whether it be an Astra, it's the same thing. It's the same phone, just a slightly different piece of hardware that's surrounding it. That's not the case with the 3PIP initiative, third-party IP peeps, the third-party IP phones. So those phones are going to be developed from the future. And then this is a good thing. Don't take this the wrong way. It's a good thing, but make sure you investigate which ones you want. It's like buying a car. Just because they're cars doesn't mean they're all the exact same thing. Yes, they all take gas. They all go on the road, but they deliver different functionalities and features beyond just getting from point A to B, and that's exactly what these new phones do. They all differ in what they offer you.
Yeah, it gives the manufacturer an opportunity to differentiate themselves. Mm-hmm. So here's a list of the compatible IP phones that work with Link. And you can see there is a good range here of phones.
And that's a really small list. In 336, we had probably double that number of phones listed in the slide. Right.
Well, that's the slide we were given.
I know. Plantronics has a bunch that aren't on there that should be, so.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about device deployments. So you want to have a deployment checklist. You want to look at the components, Link Server 2013 components that are required for device. Then you want to deploy your IP phones, of course. Configure your DNS requirements, DHCP requirements, and then the sign-in process, understanding how that works for internal users, and then deploying common area phones, because most organizations are going to have those, and hot desking. So we'll talk about hot desking there. So let's move on and look at the deployment checklist. So here's a checklist to help you out. It's high level, but it'll give you a good idea of what you need to do. So you select the appropriate device for a given usage scenario. So if you're going to use something for a conference phone, you're going to want to pick the appropriate device for that, if it's a common area phone versus an information worker. So make sure you pick the right device. And it's probably a good idea to standardize on specific devices. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of different manufacturer devices, and it's going to be a little bit more complex for you to manage those. Then you want to ensure that you have the Link Server 2013 prerequisites, and those are met. So you want to check for those. And then make the required configurations, obviously. Then provision and prepare your users, set up your devices, and then support and monitor the deployment. So those steps at the high level is what you need to make sure you cover. So in terms of components for devices for Link Server 2013, well, the phones will rely on the web services. And it will rely on the certificate services. We talked about authentication. So that's where it's going to rely on the certificates to get a certificate once it's authenticated the user once. And then after that, once it's received a certificate, it can actually authenticate the user using the certificate without having to prompt the user anymore for credentials. It's going to use the web address book service to resolve phone numbers, to normalize phone numbers and to look up individuals. And it's going to use the device update service there so that it can update new firmware onto the device using Link's device update service. And then, of course, since it's, we're talking about voice, we want to make sure that the enterprise voice is configured on Link Server. So your environment is configured for enterprise voice. And if you're going to deploy common area phones, you're going to need contact objects. Again, this is kind of a recurring theme. So if anytime you need an endpoint or user type of endpoint, but you don't want that person to, or there's not an actual person that's going to be authenticating to Active Directory, then a contact object is the better choice, and that's what this is for. So the contact object is going to represent that endpoint, that common area phone. And it's created in Active Directory, and that contact object is then enabled for Link Enterprise Voice. And once that happens, then the common area phone will be able to receive and make calls as well. And then after that, you'll have to specify your dial plans, your voice policies, and outbound call routings, just in the same way you were doing it for just Link users normally. And then you'll have the PIN authentication and policies that you can specify there. So deploying IP phones. So we want to look at systems and infrastructure requirements, configuring the authentication methods. So you can use different types of authentication methods. You want to confirm that the required components for all the UC phones are in place. So if it's missing some components, you want to make sure that those are there. And that those devices and components will meet the needs of your users. And then you want to also configure external access. So maybe some users will be working remotely, whether it's from a small branch office or maybe even from home. So those phones would be able to authenticate. And I'm referring only to the information worker phones because they authenticate to Link directly. You could actually also use them outside the firewall so it could come through. And then optionally, you can set up optional switch features to support IP phones, and that's, for example, is the LLPD MED or power and power over Ethernet. So that's a nice feature, so you don't actually have to plug in the phone directly to an outlet. So look for those features to determine what models you want to deploy and standardize on. In terms of DNS requirements, Link does use DNS to discover and find link servers. So these are the types of DNS records that need to be created. So you'll need to have an A record, an SRV record, and a couple more A records. So the first A record here that we're referring to is for the update. So it's a DHCP option 15 for SIP domains. And so that's going to be for your update service. The SRV record here is going to be used to locate your link server. So your first hop, if you will, or your next hop. And so you'll specify these different SRV records, the SIP internal, the SIP internal TLS, the SIP, the underscore SIP TLS, and then the NTP, which is in the time server. And this one here has been replaced by DHCP option 42, and we'll cover that in the next slide. And then the next, once you've defined the SRV record, you'll need to define an A record to map that FQDN of the server to its actual IP address, host in the registrar. So that way, the phone is able to resolve the SRV record, the FQDN, to its actual IP address. And then the last one is the A record for the web pool FQDN. So it's able to connect to the web services on the pool. So now we've covered the DNS requirements, let's cover the DHCP requirements. So a DHCP server must provide web service URLs and enhanced registration, registrar FQDN to devices. So they are going to use, if they can't connect to DNS, they'll connect to DHCP first. And so there are three options here. The option 42 is for the NTP, the time server, and then option 43 is for the certificate provisioning URL, so it's so that the phone is able to connect to the URL, request a certificate from Link, and then provision the phone with that certificate so that for further authentication processes, it doesn't have to prompt the user for the username and password.
And remember, that option, the 43 one, is the one that has those five sub-options. And all of this information is created when we use the utility, the DHCP utility, to generate our hex code. Because this is just hex information that's going into our environment. Microsoft provides a way to automatically upload that if you're using a Windows DHCP server. If you're not, it's up to you to contact your manufacturer. There's a lot of white papers out there how to support it on to get that up into devices. I just did it on a Cisco ASA the other day. The latest 2013 revision of the tool that generates these hex codes actually gives you a single one, a single 43 code and a single 120 code, so it makes it much simpler to do. But just keep that in mind, that this is the information that you would be doing if you were doing PIN authentication anyway, that has to be up there. So.
Right. And the last option is option 120, and that's for your SIP server. So if your phone is not able to resolve DNS SRV records and locate your server, this option here through DHCP will allow it to find the...
That's right, because remember, when you're logging in via PIN, you don't have a domain you've specified. You're not telling it who you are. There's no way to do a DNS SRV lookup because you don't have contoso.com as part of your name. So it looks to the 120 and says, okay, I don't know who this user is. Let's go here. And it goes to the 120 location that you specified, and then uses your PIN and your password, your extension and your PIN, to authenticate yourself. So right. That's how we're getting around not having knowledge of who you are.
Exactly. So that's how you resolve the next hop to your link server. So these DHCP options. So it uses the existing enterprise DHCP server. So you can use those if you already have DHCP servers. Or as an alternate, you can also use a DHCP service that's built into the Link registrars.
Right. We use that when we do several branch appliances, almost not all the time, but that's what its purpose is for. So if you're at a site that doesn't have an Active Directory or other controllers or servers that are providing DHCP, we can provide it. If you have DHCP, you do not want to use this service. This is because we have to set up relays and tell it how to get to you as the DHCP phone world. The idea here is that it's for SBAs to utilize in reality.
Exactly. So this next table here is really going to be used for your reference. It's a good reference point. I also provide a link here for more information. And you can see the three options, the three DHCP options. The first one's for the time server. The second one's for the pool certificate provisioning service URL. And you can see that the internal URL would be of this form, of this type. So you have the FQDN of the pool's web service. It's going to be on port 443, and then it's under /cert provisioning/cert provisioning service, and that will give it to you there. And then the option 120 will you where you can specify the FQDN of the pool as a first login service. So it could be a director, or it could be just, if you have a single pool, it would be just that single pool that you have there.
So there's a question on the DNS stuff. That's why would you need SIP internal as well as a SIP internal TLS? So you'd have a SIP internal record as well as SIP internal TLS.tcp. Why would you need both? From their understanding, clients resolve DNS in order, so you'd only need the entries specific for your environment.
Well, you can use both. So
yeah. It's backwards compatibility. Yeah. So in the olden days, the TLS SRV type wasn't a universal type where we could make a free form. It was TCP or UDP. That was what the SRV could be. So SIP internal TLS.tcp was, in fact, a TLS type record, but using the TCP namespace of DNS. We need to find one or the other, so it really doesn't matter.
Right. It's really there for because of backwards. Mm-hmm. It's backwards compatibility. Historically, we have gone through several evolutions of SRV records.
Many.
Yeah, a lot of them. So I would just say just put them all and don't worry about it.
Yeah, you can add them or don't. The advantage of adding the additional records, like your SIP internal or your SIP externals, is that if you're anal enough that you want to go to your event log on your clients and you do not want to ever see any warnings or errors, you will see a warning that it didn't find the record when Link signs in. It doesn't matter. It goes on to the next lookup and signs in just fine, but that would be the reason to get rid of it. It's just so you don't have any errors when the clients are logging in. So
exactly. All right, so this call flow here shows the process. So you can see here that the client connects and request DHCP option 43 and 120 from DHCP server or the link server with the DHCP enabled. The server will DHCP server will respond with the certificate web service URL and the link registrar FQDN. With that information, the device can then connect to the link certificate.
Well, that's the public cert. So that's the one where we've tied our things to. So initially, and there's questions about how do you get the root cert on the phone? Well, the phone wants to figure out where it's going to go based off what's in the certificate about his distribution points, his AIAs and his CRIL locations. He goes to that HTTP address, assuming that there is an HTTP address within your certificate, that it can go find the root, grab the root and install the root on your local machine. If it doesn't, then there's going to be problems if it can't get to or locate that root certificate within your environment. We're not going to be able to install it. So that's initially where we get that root certificate. Unless we hard reset the phone, that root cert's fine, it's in there. Only when we switch users, we're only removing the user's link certificate. We're not removing the root certificate of the domain that we're logging into. So that's how we get it. The process right there.
So it does require it does assume that the device trusts the DHCP server because it's telling it where to go contact the certificate and get the cert chain. And so once you have the cert chain, then you'll trust certificates issued by that certificate chain. Mm-hmm. And then once you have that, then you can go and request. You can resolve the user. You supply the phone number, and the PIN, and the link certificate provisioning web service will resolve it to the user's SIP URI. And once the user has a SIP URI, it can then go ahead and request a certificate for the device, and the service will then return a signed certificate from Link. And from that point on, the device can authenticate as a user using that certificate.
Right, and it will, as long as they haven't signed out or changed their user. Now, by default, those certificates are 180 days till expiration. It's where some of the concerns about if you have a Link device, and these go on your computer as well, that you can log into Link even though your Active Directory account is disabled. And that's the exact reason. You're actually authenticating no longer with AD credentials, but with TLS DSK. We're using a certificate to do that authentication to speed up the process. That default range can be reduced if desired. That's a PowerShell command. So.
Right, and that's a good point. So when people say, well, I've disabled the user account, how come the user is still able to log in? And that's because of the certificate, right? So if you really want to disable a user from a Link, then what you need to do is go into the user object in Active Directory and disable it for Link. And that will prevent the user from authenticating. As a precautionary method, you can also use PowerShell to expire the certificate.
Yeah, or completely kill the certificate from the store.
Yeah, revocate the certificate. Mm-hmm. You could just do that. So then we'll continue on with the sign-in process. And so the next step is there's going to be a connection, TLS connection to the Link registrar FKDN. So now we're connecting to the Link pool. And we're registering the user using the supported certificate. And then there's going to be a challenge, which is the www. There's a missing w on there. But www-authenticate requesting credentials. And so then you authenticate using the certificate and register as that user. And at that point, the server, the registrar, will send back a 200 OK saying, OK, you're back. You're on the network. You're connected to the Link server. So let's cover deploying common area phones. So there's going to be some steps here that you'll want to consider. So the admin sets up an account for the area common area phone, and that's going to be a contact object. The admin will designate policies for the common area phone. So you usually want to have a different policy for those phones. And then the tech will install the phone and sign into the phone. And then at that point, the phone will be available for usage. So it's really the technician that's going to sign into the phone because it's going to be using the contact object. So let's expand that a little bit more for hot desking. So here, the admin still sets up the common area account. The admin designates the phone, the common area phone, as a hot desking enabled. So it is a feature, a function, a setting there that the admin needs to specify. And it sets the idle timeout. And what do we mean by hot desking? Well, it means so if you have an office where anybody could come in, they can make a reservation and they can sit at the desk and they bring their laptop and they have a phone right next to them. Well, for the time period where they have that desk, they can sign in onto that phone as themselves. So then they can actually receive calls directly on the phone. And then when they leave, they can log off the phone and then it becomes available for the next person. And so what this process explains how to set that up. So then the next step here is for the admin to specify the idle timeout. So what that means is that if the user is idle on the phone, hasn't been using it for a while, for example, they might have taken off, they were in a rush, and they forgot to log off the phone, well, we don't want to keep that user logged on indefinitely on the phone. So we set the idle timeout so that if that time period expires, the user is automatically logged off and it becomes available for the next person. Then we go on and the tech does install the phone and sign into the phone. The phone then becomes available for common area usage, or in this case, hot desking. And then the phone indicates that a user can log in. So the next step is the user signs in using their PIN or by pairing the phone with their PC. So if they have their laptop, they could just plug in the USB onto the phone and automatically log in. And then now the phone operates as an information worker phone while the user is signed in. So as I said, the phone is now another endpoint of the user that logged in. And then when the user logs off or the timeout expires, the phone is wiped. So just like if you lost your cell phone, you could actually tell your provider to wipe the phone. In this case, it does the same thing. It just wipes the phone from your information. And then the phone just falls back to being a common area phone, and it's available again for the next person to log in.
Yeah, and the case of our hot desking is it's a combination of common area phones with the feature or option of hot desking on it. So it's a common area phone. You've logged into it with a PIN. That's its default configuration, but when you assign the policy of hot desking to this user policy of that particular phone, it's going to specify on it that they can hot desk, and so a little button appears that says sign in. That's what makes it a hot desking phone. So as soon as you hit sign in, then you can enter your own PIN, or like we said, if it's a tetherable device, you could tether it and log in via your laptop or desktop or whatever the case may be, and then it will auto sign itself back out and turn right back into that phone what it was prior to getting there. The key there is that the phone's not dead. It's a phone. It's got a number. It's a phone. Until you log into it, then it's your phone. And that common area phone that was logged in is no longer what's logged in, and it's logged out. And when it signs you out and signs itself back in. If you were to pull power, it signs in as the common area phone. It's always going to default back to that common area phone in all cases. So.
Right. You bring up a good point. It serves dual purpose, right?
Oh, yeah.
As a common area phone as well as a hot desking phone. So let's look next at the management. So how do we manage these common area phones? So we have some settings that are available, and then we obviously need a contact object to assign for each one of these phones, because as said, these phones do authenticate as a contact object, so they have an account, and so they're available. And then we'll look at creating, you know, required policies, assigning these policies to the phone, and then updating the phone devices, so if there's a firmware update to be there. So this table shows the different settings that are available. So you have the user setting, the client policy, a voice policy, meeting policy, and an external access policy. And so under these options, you have the following values. So you can specify whether it's a common area phone. This also can be configured through PowerShell. You have the option to configure it as hot desking, and if you enable it for hot desking, then you should specify the timeout period for it. And of course, it requires PowerShell to specify these settings.
Yeah, that's one of the few settings. The client policy is all configured through PowerShell for whatever reason. That's how it's done. So, for any device, users and devices.
Right. And then in terms of policies, you can enable call transfer, call park, and call forwarding, just in the same way as you can do it for regular voice policies. And then the meeting policy, you can allow IP audio. So this enables UI for the conference escalation, and can be done through the UI or PowerShell, either way. And then last but not least is the enabling of outside access. So external users would be able to use these phones. So for example, if you were outside, maybe take it home. Kind of a rare situation, but that's a possibility there. So we talked about the contact object, and let's drill it a little bit more into that. So each common area phone needs a contact object. Can't stress that more. And the contact object is basically used to manage and assign policies to that phone. So the contact object is created using PowerShell, and there's an example of the script for how to do that. And this contact object is an Active Directory object, so you can see that through ADSI.
Or ADAC. It's an object that you've told it which OU to go into, so it's an object you can go see. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right, beat that one to the death there, so that's good. So the next thing is to create the required policies. You have client policies, you have your voice policies, and you have your conferencing policies, so you can specify those for your phones. And we'll go into all the details here, but here's some examples of how you could specify those policies. And this is really there for your reference when you can look at it.
Because as best practice, you want those policies to be different than your normal user policies. These should be highly restricted devices that can't do much of anything other than make a call, because you don't know who's going to be doing it, so there's no authentication, really. It's a free-form phone.
Right, and they're different, so you have to have different policies for it. Mm-hmm. And once you've created those policies, you obviously have to assign them, and you need to grant them basically to the phone objects. And here are, again, the PowerShell commands for doing that. So you can do it using grant-cs-client-policy, and you can specify it. And additionally, you can assign a PIN to the common area phone. So this is how the administrator would assign the PIN to the device. And so when the Mac technician goes in and installs a phone, they'll log in, they'll specify the PIN in there, and so the phone will automatically log in as
right.
that combination.
No different
phone.
Than any other PIN off person. If it was a user that set a PIN, there's just no way to log in as this user in the dial-in page to set the PIN. So we have to do it from management shell. It's also important to know that in large Active Directory environments, and it doesn't even have to be that large, if you create the contact object using PowerShell and have scripts that are going through and doing all of these granting and creating objects really quick and then try to set the pins, you'll have an error 9 out of 10 times. And that's because it's not replicated yet. And so just have patience. If you get the error, create the objects, then grant your policies, then set your pins, and things will work just fine.
Yeah. So it's just latency from Active Directory application.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the next part is updating your phone device. So there are going to be some updates from your manufacturer, and so you'll want to download those and install them. And so here are some, again, PowerShell commands for doing that. Make sure you test that. You don't want to update all your devices all at once without having tested, because maybe it creates there's a bug that's introduced. And so you want to make sure you test it. And then once you've satisfied with the testing, you can go ahead and deploy those right through the control panel. All right, so analog devices. So there is support for analog devices in Link Server. And then we'll look at the topologies and then assign policies to those devices. So what are we talking about when we say analog devices? We're talking about devices that are not Link-enabled, right? They're not a Link endpoint. So like fax machines, analog phones, modems, et cetera. And so these devices support is implemented. Because there's a lot of organizations that still have these kinds of devices, so we want to make sure that we are able to support those devices in Link. And it enables streaming and managing of these analog devices through Link, so we want to make sure there is capabilities for those devices. And so the way that these analog devices connect to Link is through a qualified gateway. So they don't connect directly to Link, so they are not viewed as an endpoint from a Link perspective, but they connect through a gateway. And then from that gateway, again, to the mediation server. Just in the same way that you would have an IP PBX, for example, here. So it's a similar configuration there. And then it can connect to your Link server. All right, so then the next part is to assign policies. So a user cannot sign in on an analog device. So that's what we were talking about. So there is no user account or contact object that is associated with the device. But you can still manage these analog devices by, there is no user account associated with the device, but you can create a contact object in Active Directory to manage these devices. And again, once you have a contact object that's associated with the device, you can do all the same things that you could do with a regular object. You can assign policies to these devices. But there are some features not supported. In this case, would be parking calls, transferring calls, and setting your call forwarding options. And again, I provide a link here for more information that you can use to read more on that. And with that, that covers phone devices.
Yeah, and the question comes up, and I, for myself as well, what's the point of putting analog into Link? There's a lot of, I mean, are you ever calling a fax machine? Are you ever physically trying to do some communication? Why not just route it directly out? And the only reason that makes a lot of sense, there can be different case scenarios, but the most common reason to put them into Link is so that you can view them in your reports. So you'll be able to capture utilization in your QoE reports, because these are devices that are ticking away on the mediation server from resources perspective. So other than that,
that's it.
You may very well just want to keep analog outside. Yeah. So that's it for this session. We're going to take a meal break. This one will only be 40 minutes in length. We will be back in about 40 minutes, and then we will continue with the sessions throughout the day. So we'll see you soon.